Howdy do, buckaroos. Welcome to the Mac Observer's Daily Observations Podcast. It is Wednesday, February 5th. This is 2020. I'm your host, Kelly Gamont. Yes, I am going to do that off and on through the rest of the year. With me today, I have John Martellaro. Hi, John.
Hi, Kelly. Good morning. Nice to be here.
I'm glad to have you with me. Also with me to maybe tell you you're wrong or perhaps agree with you. We'll have to find out. I have Brian Chaffin. Hi, Brian.
Pretty good guess as to which of those it might be. But yeah, good to be here. Thanks for having us.
So I want to start out with an article that we found over at Cult of Mac about Steve Jobs and what Woz has to say about him. Right, John?
The title of the article was Woz, : Steve Jobs was driven by a desire to be important. Now, on the surface, that sounds like hubris, it sounds shallow, it sounds like somebody who has an unjustified desire to be important for the sake of self-importance. But the article itself explains in a little bit of detail why Steve Jobs felt it was important to be an important person. And the key is explained in the article about the people Steve Jobs admired and how they changed the world and got things done. And you don't get to be in charge, and you don't get to get your way unless you're an important person. So it wasn't hubris. It was a desire to change the world. And you don't get to change the world unless you're one of those people who are important. So that's my take on the evolution of Steve Jobs. I think it all started when Steve was not fired, but forced to resign himself from Apple during the Scully years, when the Macintosh was failing and Steve was removed from the Macintosh team. Mm-hmm. The humiliation of that, being the co-founder of the company, told Steve Jobs something an important lesson. You don't get to call the shots unless you're one of the structurally, legally important people in the company. And if you're just a player, no matter how good you are, you can be removed. You don't have the power to steer your own course through the company.
But I think that this comment about Steve wanting to be important really goes back to long before Steve was ousted from Apple. I think Woz is talking about Steve in the very earliest days. Wozniak wasn't even Apple when Steve Jobs was ousted.
In the earliest days, Steve perceived the business opportunity of the Apple II, whereas Woz was a bit of a tinkerer. That's how I took it.
Yeah, that's business instinct of Steve. But I think that what Woz is striking at is that Steve Jobs, from his vantage point, was driven not just by the love of technology, not just by the love of making great products, but by the desire to be a person who made a dent in the world.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Okay. All right. I'm glad that you agree that I'm completely correct.
Yeah, you are correct. Apple II was the manifestation of the culture of the times to put a personal computer in the hands of ordinary citizens, the things that people could do with it in terms of their taxes and finances and learning and writing. Mm-hmm. was a big change. And Steve Jobs understood the power of a computer in the hands of people and wanted to monetize that and make it a success.
And where this is coming from, by the way, was not the Cult of Mac sat down with Steve Wozniak. It was that to just completely go full throwback Thursday a day early, Steve Wozniak was on Guy Kawasaki's podcast. And that's where these statements came from in this conversation that we're referring to is from that podcast. So you can go listen to the whole thing if you want to check it out.
Indeed.
So that's the part that, to me, that was the part that was sort of interesting about it was that seems like an interesting conversation to listen to, since both of them are almost from different phases of really early Apple culture and technology and all of that. Like, you know, what each of them contributed, which is massive, you know, but what each of them contributed, you know, which, you know, like I said, kind of a different phases of the company almost, might be an interesting conversation to listen to. Although I don't know how much of what they actually talked about showed up on the podcast, but probably fun. Anyway, I haven't had a chance to hear it yet, but I'm looking forward to it. So now, John, you were at, this is a thing we don't talk about it all the time, but you did have time at Apple. And when you listen to Steve's assessment, does that sound accurate to you? Does that sound like the Apple that you worked for?
Yes. I was in a couple of meetings with Steve where I got to experience the first hand.
We have two Steves we're talking about.
We're talking about Jobs.
Okay. Right. So specify that.
Yeah, I was in the room with him a couple of times. He didn't directly interact with me, but I was in meetings leading the conversation. And there was no doubt that he was in charge, that he was very definite in his opinions and viewpoints, and he had the charisma and he had the strength of character and personality and voice to make his arguments stick. And woe betide anybody who disagreed with him, because he always had a comeback.
I could see that. I mean, that just sort of jives with all the casual stories we've heard, you know, that have sort of become part of Apple folklore over the years.
When your values are so deeply instilled and you're an articulate person, you're very hard to argue with, because no matter what people say in contradiction, you have your own point of view that can be brought forth more forcefully. And by force of personality, you can win an argument.
Did you ever personally witness the whole transformation of you're a bozo one day, and then the next day Steve has this great idea that was the bozo's idea yesterday?
No, not directly. But I've read stories about engineers who gently swayed Steve on minor technical issues. But I think part of the desire of Steve to be important was Steve Jobs, was that he had a vision. He had a very strong feeling about how things ought to go. And when you're the CEO, you're in charge. You get to make your vision stick. And you live or die, you succeed or fail on that vision. And Steve succeeded based on his experience and his previous hard learned experience and failure.
Okay. Fair enough.
All right.
So there's a video we show from time to time about Steve at a WWDC Q&A session, where people were throwing questions at him about how Apple needed to be doing this and Apple needed to be doing that. And Steve said, no, we need to build great products first. And this was when he was working with Ive on the iMac. Mm-hmm. And he was sure that if he didn't build hardware that people loved, the company was going to fail.
He was right about that, wasn't he?
Yeah.
The one thing you can always say pretty universally, regardless of what product it is that you're talking about from Apple, is that people love it. People love their iMacs. People love their little beige box Macs. People love their iPhones, their iPads. Like, that's always been the thing. No matter how many of them they sold, the people who have them really, really do love them. So
Johnny Ive played a trick on the customers. The plastic of the original Bondi iMac was such that it radiated the warmth of the internal heat. And so when you touched it, it had a really pleasant warmth feeling, like you were touching a human being instead of a cold piece of hardware. And that had a big psychological impact on customers.
Really?
Yeah.
I don't remember ever petting my iMac, but I didn't have the Bondi one. So maybe that's why. Mine was Blueberry instead of Bondi, because I got the one with the G3 400 megahertz upgrade. I waited for the second gen of iMac for that. So, memories. I'm sure the podcast is interesting. The summary we got of it was kind of an interesting thing. So you all should go check that out. And right now, I want to talk to you about our sponsor today, and our sponsor is Zapier. And one of the things you need to, well, the basic thing you need to know about Zapier is that it is a very, very easy way to automate your work because it will hook your stuff to your other stuff. And I'm going to borrow Dave's example from yesterday where he talked about how he used to spend time every week getting ready for the Mac Geek Gap podcast. And people who sponsor the show get a shout out on the show. So he would have to go to the email and go look through all the emails that were waiting there and find people and get their name and their city and state and country, and then go over to a spreadsheet and then enter all that information by hand in a spreadsheet. And he sat down with Zapier one day and figured out that every time an email comes into that address, that automatically sends an email when somebody signs up to be a paid sponsor Mac Geek Gab, he set it up so that when that email comes in, Zapier looks at that email, gets the name and the city and state and country, and sends it over to the spreadsheet automatically and saves Dave all that time. There are more than 4.5 million people who are doing things like this that are saving them an average of 40 hours a month by using Zapier, and you can be one of those people. Right now, through the end of the month, just my listeners, you can try Zapier free by going to the special link of zapier.com/TDO. That's zapier.com/TDO, and you get a free 14-day trial over there at zapier.com/TDO. And part of the reason I think these guys are all saving an average of 40 hours a month is because it's not only saving you the time that you would spend doing the task, but it's also saving you the time that you spend thinking about it and sighing deeply and rolling your eyes before you summon up the energy to do it. And then all of the time that you spend after it thinking about how you wish you didn't have to do that thing anymore. Now you don't have to. You can set things up with Zapier and let your computer do the stuff for you that it should be doing. We'd like to thank Zapier for sponsoring the show today. And our other subject today is, once again, I'm going to go to John for this, and it's not going to be controversial at all, and that is John ranking television shows from some of the different streaming services. I believe you called them their signature programs, right, John?
Signature shows, yes.
Signature shows. All right. Let's hear it.
All right, so yesterday I recorded with Sharla Henry for Background Mode, which will air Monday, and we talked about the different contents and the technology of the streaming services. We covered most of the major services. That show will air Monday. As an aside, during the podcast, we talked about the signature shows that are so important to a new streaming service's success. And I got the idea yesterday afternoon after we finished recording that it would be interesting to talk about why these signature shows are so important and to rank them. Now, I know everybody's taste is different. I had one reader tell me that The Morning Show was the worst show on television. I had one Twitter follower tell me that it's the best show on television. So opinions vary about this. And I went into it knowing that, and I mentioned that in the preamble, but still, for the sake of a discussion, and I thought it was an interesting discussion to have, why these shows are so well done and why I like them. From a personal standpoint, it might help some people decide whether they're going to subscribe to it.
Well, like I said, this isn't controversial at all.
Well, you know, Kelly and I are one mind on Mandalorian. And that was the number one show that I ranked amongst the streaming services as a signature show. Everybody I know knows about The Mandalorian. Everybody I talk to, my barber knows about it. All my friends at the Super Bowl party we had at my friend's house, my wife, everybody knows about The Mandalorian. Everybody loves it. And what astounded me about it was that no corners appeared to be cut. It's a beautifully designed plot. Angle. I mean, a gunslinger falls for an infant, takes it under his protection. But the Star Wars technology, the background, the world of Star Wars, the special effects, the computer-generated imagery, all of this stuff is first-class stuff.
Not just first-class. Some of it's been invented. I don't want to derail into a media conversation, but if you have not seen anything about the filming of The Mandalorian, I highly recommend you go find some of those articles, because the way that they managed to do what they're doing and like the mechanics of it is A, something most people haven't done before, and people who directed episodes even talked about how it changed how it was possible for them to direct things based on the way that they were filming these programs. And the technology that goes into putting them on all these alien planets and all of that is mind-blowing, to put it mildly. And I've been kind of a special effects, how exactly did they do that nerd, for a long time. And this is the new frontier. And
it shows. It's when you mind-blowing. Watch it, it shows. You feel it right away. I mean, you appreciate the technology and the money that went into this. And it's a warning sign to anybody who's coming out with a new streaming service. NBC Universal, I'm looking at you, Peacock, that it is fundamentally important to have a fantastic, to invest in and commit to a great signature series, as Apple has done and as Disney has done and as CBS All Access has done.
Well, hasn't NBC done that with The Office? I'm only being a little facetious. Only a little.
Number two was Picard. There's only been two episodes, but I've seen enough of it to decide that it deserved a number two ranking in my book. Patrick Stewart is amazing. The plot is excellent. The visual effects are amazing. Patrick Stewart has still got it when it comes to getting you to enlist in his passions and to wrap you into his character and to make his mission your mission. He's very good at that.
Mm-hmm. Honestly, if that show had been Picard reads the phone book to various other characters, I still would be totally into it. That would be fantastic.
Well, it's similar to The Mandalorian, and that Picard takes up a mission that's very personal, based on a very strong friendship with his former shipmate, Lieutenant Commander Data.
Mm-hmm.
I won't give away any spoiler, but the home and friendship and family are play an important role in this.
Yeah,
as the, with The Mandalorian, so.
It's, and another show where no expense was spared on effects.
The way these shows tie together science fiction and the human element.
It takes place on other planets. In some cases, you see some things that happen in space. And another show where no corners were cut. Like, it looks like they brought out the A-Team. That's a show that should be on streaming. They brought out the A-Team for getting these effects done and making things look legit.
It feels like a movie.
Yeah.
It feels like a movie more than The Mandalorian does. And The Mandalorian also feels like a movie.
Yeah.
In what way, Brian? I'm going to ask you that.
Just the world, the scope of the image that we're
production
that we're seeing, the production value, the ginormity of the of the world. I mean, watch original Star Trek. Everything is clearly a set with a very, very few exceptions. You know, you've got the styrofoam, boulders and and a lot of reused elements. You've got a lot of reused ships firing at each other scenes and things like that. It
sometimes you don't even have that, like the gunfight at the OK Corral, which was very surreal and low key and low budget.
In that particular case, they actually made the surreal. They made the low budget
part of
that episode. Yes. Like it was like part of the world itself.
They were budget strapped in season three, and they had to resort to that kind of trickery.
Even if they were making exceptional use of what was available to them at the time, it still wouldn't look great.
Fair enough. And if you look at a show like The Mandalorian, feels like a complete universe.
Yes,
the Picard feels like a complete universe.
Mm-hmm.
It just feels big. They both feel big, but I think that Picard actually feels even bigger than The Mandalorian does. The Mandalorian is a Western.
Yes,
and it feels like a TV show Western, even though it does have a bigness to the universe.
I wrote that it could have been a previous John Wayne movie where a framed lawman is on the run with a child under his care.
Oh man, come on. At least go Clint Eastwood, because that's what Pedro is basing his character on. It's Clint Eastwood.
I will say, I can hear Clint Eastwood more clearly saying, I can bring you in warm, or I can bring you in cold. Which is one of my favorite moments in that whole show.
Anyway. So back to John's premise.
Yes.
Good morning. The morning show. I keep wanting to call it Good Morning America, which is ridiculous. The morning show.
Yeah. What a weird name for a show, Brian.
It also feels big.
Mm-hmm.
Right. We don't feel it's, it doesn't like, you look at a show like The Office and The Office feels very, very small.
Mm-hmm.
And it's supposed to, that's not a criticism of The Office. The morning show very much just has this very big, large feel. And this is to John's, I completely agree with John that offering that sort of production value is key for these streaming services. And, you know, and the fact that they can do it is just part of that whole golden age of television, a new golden age of television that we're in.
I mentioned you in the article at the end.
I know, I preened a little bit.
Well, everyone should go check it out. And John looks forward to your letters, and you can send those to observations@microserver.com. I thought it was interesting, particularly because I hadn't really thought about things in units of signature shows. Right. So, you know, it just sort of didn't occur to me that was a thing that was happening. I mean, it is, obviously, but I hadn't really thought about it that way. So it was an interesting perspective on that. And we will end up talking about it more once we get our hands on Peacock and maybe HBO Max and get a chance to kind of see what those experiences are like. Then we'll let you know more about it. So I want to thank both of you for being here today. Brian, do you have anything else to add?
Nope.
Before I wrap it up.
Good times.
All right. John, do you have anything else to add?
That's it. Thanks for having me.
All right. Well, thank you both for being here today. I appreciate it very much. I'm your host, Kelly Gamon. I will talk to all of you tomorrow. Until then, be excellent to each other.